Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. And I'm very pleased to welcome as our first guest to provide an appreciation of the character and, well, how we're faring in that war, a man who has been actively involved both in military and civilian capacities in helping make sense of it and, well, helping it come out right. He formerly served as a four-star general in the United States Army, including as its vice chief of staff. He is General Jack Keane, a great friend of this program. We're always glad to have him with us. Welcome back, General.
Always good to be here, Frank.
Well, a lot going on, including in spaces of the world that you have been very actively engaged in for a long time. Maybe we could start with Iraq, General Keane. What is your current sense of what's happening there at the moment and what the United States should be doing to have it come out right?
Well, certainly what the world is seeing in Iraq is an extraordinary development because ISIS is actually the new face of al-Qaeda, and they have gained control over the territory that only the 9/11 al-Qaeda dreamt about. And truly quite forfeited as a result of their attack on the American people. They lost their sanctuary, and they became a very defensive organization. This organization has exceeded the capacity of the 9/11 al-Qaeda and has truly gained territory, as they would describe it, as a caliphate. And what their intent to do, Frank, and so our viewers understand, is truly dominate and control the Middle East. In their minds, this is not a Sunni-Shia issue because the countries they intend to dominate are as much run by Sunnis as some are by Shia. And quite frankly, they've gained a significant amount of control in Syria and obviously in Iraq as well. And I'm absolutely stunned that we're not doing anything about it. We're literally sitting on our hands as opposed to striking ISIS, which is a threat to the stability and security of the Middle East, which is in our national interest, and also eventually a direct security threat to Europe and to the United States. And we should be taking some military action against ISIS now while they're very vulnerable, and they are vulnerable because they're behaving more like an army than a terrorist organization.
I'm struck by the fact that Masroor Barzani, the head of the Kurdish region's National Security Council, has very directly said, look, you have a choice, quote, either they can come and face them here, meaning we, or they can wait for them to go back to their own countries and face terrorism on their doorsteps. I take it you agree with that. And General, in terms of striking ISIS or the Islamic State or the Caliphate or whatever you call it in Iraq at the moment, how would you recommend we do that?
Well, I think there's two things we should do immediately. One is they're very exposed, right, because they have staging bases, sanctuaries in Syria where much of their equipment is. Obviously, they moved some of it to Iraq. And those areas are very vulnerable to us. This is not an organization that's hiding in and among the people, as al-Qaeda did in Iraq from 2003 to 2008. So they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to airstrikes because they are behaving like a conventional military organization. Now, when they get close to population centers and they're involved in a fight in those centers, obviously those targets are much more challenging, and we would need air ground controllers to facilitate the use of air power. But nonetheless, there's targets in Iraq and in Syria now that are very vulnerable and accessible to the use of air power. The second thing I would do is put special operation forces in Iraq to strike their leaders at night, much as we did with the al-Qaeda in Iraq and we're doing right now with the Taliban. And, you know, they would do that clandestinely. They'd set up a base someplace that would be secure and conduct those operations. And that would clearly throw ISIS off guard and make them a much more defensive organization than what they currently are, which is obviously an offensive organization.
General Jack Keane, do you have any concern that what we would be doing in that event would be to align ourselves with Iran and help prop up its increasingly assertive bid to control at least much of the Shiite parts of Iraq, if not more?
Well, make no mistake about it. I mean, the Iranians are our strategic adversary in the Middle East. They want regional hegemony themselves as an Islamist state, and clearly they've been trying to drive us out of the region by using their proxies, the Hezbollah mainly, to kill us. But the fact of the matter is ISIS is a threat to the stability and security of the Middle East, and that is in our national interest not to have that happen. Their next target, as stated by ISIS, is Jordan. The fact that Iran also is opposed to ISIS does not mean that we have to ally ourselves in any way, shape, or form with them, which I don't believe we should do.
Yeah. General, we seem at the cusp of repeating a mistake that I think you probably agree we contributed to in terms of creating the vacuum of power that has now been filled, at least in part, by this Islamic State outfit, by withdrawing all of our forces from Iraq in Afghanistan. Do you believe that the president should be, in light of what's happening on the ground in Iraq at the moment, reconsidering the decision to disengage all U.S. forces by 2016 at the very latest?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I thought it was a misguided policy decision to remove all of our forces by 2016, as you indicated. I think certainly the decision to remove our forces from Iraq in 2011 and to disengage from them politically and not try to shape their political future, which took place when the Obama administration took office, that began actually in January 2009. Those decisions, as they pertain to Iraq, political disengagement and military disengagement were horrific and have helped to bring us what we're facing today in Iraq. And you're absolutely right. We are destined to have that repeated in Afghanistan. It is another terrible strategic decision not to leave forces to assist the Afghans who do need some assistance, and also to leave a counterterrorism force, in other words, a special operations force, to be able to attack the leadership of the Taliban post-2016. We wouldn't stay there indefinitely, but we need to stay there certainly a few more years after 2016 to assist our Afghan partners.
It's a tragedy, and I can only imagine how much you feel the weight of that tragedy, knowing, as you do firsthand, the kinds of sacrifice that our forces made to liberate both of these countries and to try to help them have a different kind of future than is certainly what they're facing at the moment in Iraq and in prospect in Afghanistan. So I'd strongly agree with you that cutting and running out of Afghanistan at the moment is folly in the extreme. And to hear the president's spokesman say he's not disposed to reconsider that decision is really an indictment, I'm afraid, of the administration at the moment. General, let me turn quickly. You've also been very actively involved and quite vocal on your concerns about Syria. You've mentioned ISIS having a presence there and having taken territory, being quite active. Of course, you have a whole host of other characters that are very unsavory. What is your current thinking, General Keane, on the opportunity for us still at this point to aid some outfit in Syria other than the al-Nusra Front or the ISIS or the Muslim Brotherhood and have a better outcome than we might otherwise have?
Well, Syria certainly is a complicated situation, and you know, reasonable people can disagree as to what to do with Syria, certainly. In this case, I actually do agree with the president's decision, which is to finally provide some assistance to the Syrian Free Army, something that Secretary Clinton, Panetta, and Director Petraeus had recommended to the president in 2012, the sum of that is, of that year, and he rejected it. Finally, that assistance is beginning to be provided. Frustratingly, it's not as robust, I think, as it should be. The Free Syrian Army is the only force in Syria that has ever fought ISIS and had actually had some success with them. That would not be the only reason why we would support their endeavor. Certainly, it would also be to change the momentum against the Assad regime in Syria as well. But I also believe that arming and assisting those rebels is the prudent move to make. It should be robustly done, but we also should be striking ISIS targets in Syria. Both of those things together would have quite an impact on ISIS and also would provide significant relief to what ISIS is doing in Iraq, because they would not be able to ignore it and they would have to commit forces to go back into Syria.
journalists who can say very serious people can have different minds on this subject. It's always appreciated to hear what's on yours, and your counsel is very seriously, I think, needed at a moment like this. We appreciate you taking some time to talk with us about it, and we'll look forward to a visit with you in the near future. Keep up the great work, my friend. Stay well, and thank you for your service to our country. Next up, the Center for Security Policy's Fred Flights joins us to talk about the president's decision to extend the nuclear talks with Iran and other national security frauds. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist or a logistics expert? A medical technician or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy and career intelligence professional, Fred Flights, who distinguished himself in his decades of service at the Central Intelligence Agency, at the State Department, and on Capitol Hill with the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. We're very pleased to have him with us at the Center and always delighted that he joins us each week here at Secure Freedom Radio. Fred, welcome back.
Good to be here, Frank.
You've been musing and writing and commentating about, for some time now, the Edward Snowden affair. You had some recent insights into the Glenn Greenwald component of that affair. Talk a little bit about the guy who really helped Snowden get a lot of his treachery into the public domain through The Guardian and other outlets.
Well, Greenwald is a former London Guardian writer, and he's been the principal collaborator in getting the leaked NSA material stolen by Edward Snowden into the news media. Now, earlier this month, Greenwald had a news story that the NSA and CIA were spying on American Muslims only because of their religion and that they were completely innocent. Well, there's this great story, which I think goes to the integrity of Greenwald, about Nihad Awad, the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. CARE says that they are America's largest Muslim civil rights organization, but they're linked to Hamas, and they've been named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the prosecution of the Holy Land Foundation, a Muslim charity that has been convicted of providing material support for terrorism by giving money to Hamas. Well, it turns out that this week, CARE is speaking out in favor of Hamas. And there was a rally in Miami where they are yelling, "We are Hamas." But the story gets more interesting. There's a report out this week in Newsbusters that Greenwald has received thousands of dollars to speak at CARE fundraising banquets. So I think we really need to look very carefully at these allegations about misdeeds by U.S. intelligence made by Mr. Greenwald.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. CARE is, in my personal and professional opinion, a Muslim Brotherhood front, not just a Hamas outfit. And it is a scandal that it is treated otherwise, let alone aided and abetted by the likes of Glenn Greenwald. We're visiting with Fred Flights, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy and a career intelligence professional, also a senior analyst with the Langley Intelligence Group Network, lignet.com. And Fred, you are one of the country's duty experts on Iran, on its contributions to regional instability, to terrorism, and the threat, not least, of its acquisition of weapons of mass destruction, notably nuclear weapons. What did you make of the president's decision announced late Friday, as he tends to do these things, that he was going to extend by another few months the negotiations with the Iranians, ostensibly for the purpose of completing a deal that will end their nuclear weapons program?
Well, ostensibly for a deal is really the key words here. The president is facing strong opposition, bipartisan opposition from Congress. There are members, especially in the Senate, who see no prospect of a deal that will actually end the Iranian nuclear program. So I agree with the president's people that no deal is better than a bad deal. But I think this administration is planning to agree on a bad deal. And it comes down to this, Frank. Obama has decided to concede the nuclear bomb to Iran. He's decided it can't be stopped, so we're going to let Iran have the bomb, but try to constrain this program. We've made so many concessions. We've given so much ground. We've thrown away so many UN Security Council resolutions. It's hard to reach any other conclusion, but it gets worse. Not only will this be a bad deal, it will be a short-lived deal. We're arguing with Iran right now whether this agreement will be in place for only 5 to 7 years, or the Obama administration's position, double digits, maybe as few as 10 years. After that time, Iran will be entitled to engage in any nuclear activities that it wishes. It's a catastrophe.
And predictably so. You, among others, were warning from the moment that the so-called interim deal was announced, indeed going back to the very process that the administration embarked on to fashion such a negotiated outcome that no good was going to come of it. And I'm afraid you're being proven absolutely right, Fred. And the dangers associated with this are hard to overstate at the moment. And it adds to the, well, as I call it, the national security fraud that has been perpetrated by this administration on so many fronts that you have John Kerry over the weekend pronouncing that this process is rolling back Iran's nuclear program, and that the sanctions regime is still intact, and all is well. It just ain't so. Fred, let me turn to one other thing. Last week, you participated in a very, very, I thought, instructive program on the Alibaba initial public offering. This is an internet giant out of China that is hoping to raise some $20 billion on the U.S. capital market. And you, among others, expressed real concern about what this was likely to translate into. Happily, it has been announced that that deal has been postponed. The IPO, at least, has been postponed by, at a minimum, a month. So are there reasons to be further pushing this off, if not scuppering the deal altogether, in your judgment?
Well, there's people who know this better than I. They can talk about real legal and financial concerns, shortcuts that have been taken that put people who would buy shares of this IPO at serious risk. What I've been focusing on is the security risk. We know that cyber companies that operate in China are completely beholden to the Chinese government. Companies that will not cooperate are being thrown out. Western companies can't operate in China. Alibaba will have to do exactly what the Chinese government wants if it wants access to this market. If that means providing information for American companies, providing information on dissidents, helping steal U.S. defense secrets. I mean, this is what Alibaba will be doing and is probably already doing, and that's why I'm very worried about this IPO going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, you should be, and so should we all, indeed. We're going to be finding, I think, that there are more things, you know, lurking under and scuttling from this rock as we pull it up and put some light on it. And I appreciate very much your doing so. Again, Fred Flights is our guest, a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy and senior analyst with Langley Intelligence Group Network. Fred, in closing, let me just ask you about this crisis or conflict or war, if you will, in Israel at the moment, vis-a-vis Hamas. What are your thoughts on the nature of that war and the importance of Israel prosecuting it to the fullest for the purpose specifically of destroying Hamas?
Well, Israel does not want another deal like they got in November 2012 that simply kicks this can down the road, that ends the conflict. Hamas keeps its missiles and it decides to resume firing them at Israel at the time of its choosing. But it's much more dangerous than 2012 because of a large number of long-range missiles that it's received from Syria and Iran. I mean, Israel made a very difficult decision after Hamas refused to negotiate to invade Gaza. And I think Israel's going to stay a while, maybe a couple of weeks, to destroy as many missiles and as many infiltration and weapon storage tunnels as it possibly can. It has to, for security.
Well, I hope they'll have the luxury of doing that. Of course, the Obama administration has been applying considerable pressure on it, including what I think of as an act of economic warfare, of shutting down, effectively, Ben-Gurion Airport, though I understand the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, has just announced that it's lifting that ban on flights in and out of that airport. But it has not stood with Israel, though the rhetoric has been pretty good, quite as I think it has to, and I fear as it does in the next few weeks, we will see something well short of the outcome that you just described taking place. Fred Flights, as always, good to talk with you, and thank you for your insights on the challenges that we're facing in so many of these respects. Come back to us again soon, and in the meantime, stay well. Next up, Zach Taylor, president of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. No U.S. president since the founding of contemporary Israel has been more hostile to the Jewish state than Barack Obama. He has repeatedly demeaned its elected leader, demanded that it make suicidal territorial concessions, and aided and abetted its enemies by embracing the Muslim Brotherhood abroad and at home. This week, it appears Team Obama has decided to add economic warfare to its hostile actions against Israel. At least, that's the practical effect of the Federal Aviation Administration's direction to U.S. airlines to suspend flight operations at Ben Gurion International Airport. Senator Ted Cruz wants to know whose idea that was. Undermining our friends and emboldening our enemies like Hamas have been hallmarks of the Obama presidency. In Israel's necessary death struggle with such jihadists, there is no room for either. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement? And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say that we have with us a man who has spent much of his professional life trying to secure our border. He is Zach Taylor. He's been with us frequently in the past, and we're always pleased to have him with us. He is the president of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers. Comes to the job with a considerable personal record of accomplishment as a Border Patrol officer, including 26 years in service to our country. Zach Taylor, welcome back. Good to be with you.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be here.
Zach, let me ask you to start with kind of a situation report, if I can use that term, on what is the state of play at the moment along our southern borders, particularly in Texas, which has been the focus of so much of this invasion, really, is the way I think of it. Is there evidence at the moment that the influx of folks is slackening? And whether it is or whether it isn't, what's the current lay of the land?
Well, the very first thing you have to understand is the numbers they report are apprehensions. That's the people that are actually taken into custody. Apprehensions are down. that doesn't mean that people crossing the border is down. It just means that the number of people they're catching are down. So we go back to what I said on previous occasions, is we really don't know what the situation on the border is. But when they tell us that apprehensions are down, that means that the pipeline of people that are in the United States illegally and are going out to different locations in the United States has diminished.
And does this reflect, Zach, in some measure, the fact that the numbers of people who are turning themselves into Border Patrol or law enforcement officers is diminishing? That, of course, was a phenomenon that we saw a lot of, particularly with these so-called unaccompanied illegal minor aliens. Is that what's contributing to these numbers coming down, at least the reported incidents of apprehension?
Well, I haven't talked to the people there, but that is a logical assumption, that because the bulk of what they were catching were people that were turning themselves in, not necessarily unaccompanied minors, but it was adults, or what they call partial family, incomplete or partial family units, particularly a single young female with multiple children. And so what they would do was for instance, you've got a 25-year-old female with four or five kids, and they would take this person, of course, maintain the unity of the family, and move them somewhere in the United States. Well, that one woman with five children is not going to enter the workforce. She's going to be taking care of five kids, and that means that the United States taxpayer is going to be taking care of her and the five kids.
One of the other things that you've raised an alarm about, Zach Taylor, from the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers, is that there is some considerable number of these folks, perhaps they're the family with at least one or two of the children, bringing in diseases. Give us a sense, based on your conversations with your colleagues, former colleagues perhaps, as to what they're confronting now, and what are the implications for the Border Patrol personnel themselves as this influx brings in tuberculosis and scabies and heavens knows what all else?
Well, understand that the Border Patrol agent is not a medical doctor, but they said, they told me that it was pretty much a situation where they saw people that were obviously ill. You know, either they had a fever type situation, which, you know, you got the shivering that goes along with it, and you've got nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, things that are, you know, obvious that the person's dealing with. But the agents don't know what is causing the symptoms that are obvious on the patient. We do know that a couple of agents have been hospitalized. I hear two with a particularly dangerous type of pneumonia. We know that they've picked up scabies and different things like this. We know that the agents are being advised by their union to bring clothes to change, to take a shower and change into clean clothes when they leave to go home to their families so that they won't transmit the diseases. But I don't think the agent really knows what is happening with the, or what the diagnosis are of the more obviously ill people. Now, I heard straight up for a fact that they were shipping people, they were putting people on commercial aircraft and flying them out of the Rio Grande Valley that were obviously ill before they were medically screened. But I did not hear on the receiving end where they landed in the United States whether or not they received any medical attention. Now, to me, that is a larger red flag than what the agents were seeing, and Health and Human Services were getting secondary inspections for medical screenings for them.
Let me just say that it certainly sounds as though not just the Border Patrol personnel, Zach Taylor, but the American people themselves are at risk of various kinds of diseases that are real public safety risks. And it's a travesty, as you say, if they're being put onto public conveyances, whether it's airplanes or buses, and shipped around the country without being treated, particularly if these diseases are particularly communicable. Zach, let me turn quickly, if I may, to your current thinking on how the administration is handling this. Governor Perry, as you know, in Texas has called up 1,000 members of the National Guard out of a sense of, I guess, desperation that there's not been more help coming from Washington. I know you've had misgivings about that approach, but also very real concerns about the culpability, if I may use that term, of the Obama administration and having created these conditions in the first place. Talk a little bit about both of those, if you would.
Well, the paper trail shows that they've been preparing for this since about 2010. And, of course, we all know about the January 2014 advertisement for services to handle 65,000 unaccompanied minors. So they knew this was coming. They had a fairly good handle on the number. I think the number actually is going to be pretty close when it's all said and done. So this was a planned event that was orchestrated by the administration. It started with the Deferred Action Program and continued with the messaging. The largest message outside of the administration was the passage of Senate Bill 744 in the Senate, where 68 senators voted for passage.
That's and the so-called Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill.
Yes. Essentially, that sent a message to the rest of the world that America had passed an amnesty because it was voted out of the Senate by such a large margin. And that's how it was perceived. And perceptions in foreign countries are fact. They don't have Snopes. They don't have fact check. And they just perceptions. Now, the real flood started in 2012. In about an 18-month period, approximately 60,000 of these Central Americans were funneled through a naval facility in California, and they were mostly single males, age 13, 14 to 17, actually probably closer to 16 if you got the average age. They were single males, and this is what they told the people. This is that screened them and processed them. We have heard that if we come here, that the government will give us a permiso and a work permit, and we'll be allowed to stay. And we want to come here and early and be here for when Obama signs the amnesty law in August of 2014.
Well, that may or may not work out that way, as they say, but it doesn't really matter. They're here, and many of them, as I think you're very well aware, Zach, with that particular demographic especially, are likely here not to work in honest paying jobs, but to work for gangs. It's a very frightening story. We appreciate enormously, Zach Taylor, what you do for the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers to give voice to those who are currently in the line and facing these very difficult conditions. Keep it up, sir. Come back to us again very soon, if you would.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Any soldier. It could be your father, your sister, your neighbor, or your best friend. Or it could be someone like this soldier who writes, quote, "This is a great thing you are doing here. Keep up the good work." AnySoldier.com has become synonymous with goodwill and great stuff. The troops really appreciate the effort. Take care and thanks again, end quote. Log on to www.anysoldier.com and find out what you can do to help our deployed men and women in the armed forces.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, it's not every day that we get to share some good news on this program, I regret to say, but
this is such a day, and I couldn't be more pleased to be able to do it with a friend and colleague who has been intimately involved in the fight to bring about this good news. The good news involves Maryam Ibrahim, a woman of the Christian faith who was almost put to death in her native Sudan because she refused to renounce it. And she and her husband and two children, one of whom was born while she was imprisoned, awaiting a death sentence, now have arrived in Italy. And Faith McDonald, who is the director for Religious Freedom Program at the Institute for Religion and Democracy, and she is also its director of the Church Alliance for a New Sudan. And she has been tireless in her advocacy on behalf of Maryam Ibrahim. And I just wanted to reach out and say congratulations, Faith, to you and all of those you've worked with and led so well in this fight. You must be exhilarated by the news that the family is now in Italy. Tell us a little bit about this backstory.
Yes, indeed, Frank. Thank you very much. And I do thank all those who were working in advocacy and praying for Maryam and her family. And it's just such great news. I was in the middle of having my car worked on when I got a tweet telling me the good news. Was not expecting this at all right at this point in time.
She had managed to get a commutation of her sentence, I guess, out of the Sudanese government, which is one of the most vile on the planet, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But she had managed to get to the airport on one occasion before, and that hadn't worked out so well. Tell us about that part of the story and what happened next.
Sure. Well, first of all, her sentence, all the charges were dropped when it was appealed in the main court in Khartoum. It was the Sharia court that had sentenced her to death for apostasy and also to 100 lashes before they killed her for supposed adultery, for being married to a Christian man. So that was, those charges were dropped. She had been freed from prison and was on her way out of the country with her family at the airport when they stopped them. They had been using for her a emergency travel document from South Sudan. Now, they had every right to do that because Daniel is a citizen of South Sudan as
that,
well
that
as the United
husband,
States.
Of course. Right.
Right. Yep. Daniel Wani. He is from South Sudan, a Christian, and he came to the United States in 98 and became a citizen in 2005. So they had every right to do that, but Khartoum likes to play games, and the different factions of the government were in a power struggle with each other about this case, which we've seen right up till then. They were in the last couple weeks, actually, they've been living in the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum. And I was beginning to think we were going to have a situation like there was in the 1970s with the Siberian Seven, the seven Pentecostal Christians who lived in the U.S. Embassy in Moscow for 5 years. But thank God that didn't happen.
No, it's sort of providential. And just a little bit more detail on this government in Sudan. You have been following this very closely, of course, Faith McDonald, at the Institute on Religion and Democracy, and have been trying to build a new Sudan, in fact, and helped birth the country of South Sudan. Talk a little bit about the Sharia adherent character of the regime in Khartoum and what that has meant for the people of Sudan and for the people now of South Sudan and the region more generally.
Sure. Well, the first thing to remember is that the Khartoum regime is a real survivor, and they have done that because they play games so well and act so much smarter than, for instance, the United States government does. It's an imposition of Sharia on everyone in Sudan, which of course means strict adherence to Sharia law for both Christians and Muslims. And in fact, when South Sudan claimed its independence in 2011, the president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, then said, now Sudan is just going to be a Muslim country. There's no room for any other religions. And so this was, of course, very alarming to the Christians. There are many churches in Sudan itself, and they have seen churches being bulldozed and Christians being persecuted, and then cases like Miriam's, where people are charged with apostasy for the crime of leaving Islam, even though in her case she had grown up as a Christian and been a Christian all her life. There are others who have been Muslim and who have converted to Christianity, but Sudan does not allow them the religious freedom to follow their consciences and their faith, and will see them for apostasy. So right now, even though we have rejoiced so much in Miriam's release, there are thousands of Miriams and thousands of men in Sudan who are not free from this egregious government. So we want to try to encourage freedom for all in Sudan.
Yeah, well, I suspect it's actually millions that aren't free. It's some that may be resisting it and seeking, as she has, freedom. But Miriam, I guess, is now kind of a case study of what can happen to women at the hands of this brutally repressive Sharia doctrine, Faith McDonald. Thank God she's managed to escape the clutches of this this barbaric regime, as you've described, and found her way to Italy. Her husband and, I guess, children being American citizens would presumably create a basis for her to come here. The protection she was afforded by the embassy, our embassy in Khartoum, suggests that they recognize that. Is that what you expect? And if so, how soon might we see her here, do you think?
Yes, that is going to happen. And I would add that they finally recognized that. The U.S. Embassy in Khartoum and the State Department were quite slow in responding to the plight of Miriam back from September when she was first arrested. And Daniel Wani, her husband, went to the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum and asked for help. He was basically told, we don't have time for this. In fact, I was at a hearing yesterday held by U.S. Representative Chris Smith, and one of the testifiers was the former ambassador to East Timor, who was also the general counsel for Immigration and Naturalization Services years ago, Joseph Reese, who was just brilliant. And his testimony made clear that there should have been no problems when Daniel asked for visas for his children as American citizens. He said that according to immigration law, these children were American citizens. This is nothing that had to be conferred on them by the State Department.
Or proven by him in terms of DNA testing and the like. Faith McDonald, this is such an interesting story. And again, your role and that of the Institute for Religion and Democracy is so laudable. It almost certainly wouldn't have happened had we not seen, with your leadership, the kind of outcry, both from the public at large and from the Congress, against this kind of Sharia behavior. Thank you for this great work. Congratulations again. We look forward to having Miriam on the show, I hope, when she gets to the States. And in the meantime, I hope you and she and her family will stay well and stay safe. And the rest of you, I hope, will join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.